response is unprecedented. And I want to insist, it is unprecedented. The harm to civilians is unprecedented. And what is making matters worse is that this is broadcasted every day in front of our very eyes, and yet nothing is being done to prevent that bloodshed. The United States has been used veto at the Security Council to prevent any kind of meaningful intervention. It has shielded Israel from the denunciation that required. It has put them. It has pretended for the longest period of time that no violations were committed. This is why Amnesty International is concluding that the international system is on the brink of collapse right now. International law is not just violated. People who are violating international law are justifying their violations. And that means they are pretending that international law either has no meaning or does not apply to them. But whatever they have, is the emptying out of international law, the emptying out of the Geneva Convention that we're supposed to regulate war, the emptying out of the Genocide Convention, the emptying out of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the completely uselessness of the Security Council. We have an International Court of Justice that could play a role, and yet its rulings are being ignored. So all in all, coming on the heels of Russia's aggression of Ukraine, the only that we can reach is that the international system is collapsing and that the world is being plunged back to where we were promised will happen never again.
Dr. Kalamar, we want to go to a U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, who on Wednesday called for an investigation into the mass graves at Nasser.
We have been in touch at multiple levels with the Israeli government. We want answers. We want to understand exactly what happened. You've seen some public commentary from the IDF on that, but we want to know of what the circumstances were, and we want to see this thoroughly and transparently investigated so that the whole world can have a comprehensive answer, and we, the United States, can as well.
So that's Jing Wednesday. If you could respond to that, and what kind of investigation you believe needs to happen, and who should conduct this investigation?
Well, first and foremost, Amnesty International and others have been calling on for those investigations for a very long time. The journalist that was speaking before me pointed out that those investigations have been called on since 20. Nothing has ever happened. You cannot rely on the Israeli authorities to deliver any kind of meaningful investigation. Right now, no one can Gaza. No one can provide the expertise required for this investigation. We have mass graves. People are looking, and that's absolutely humane, are looking for their loved one, which means that the crime scene itself is going to be meaningless within a few hours or a few days. There are absolutely nobody there who can protect the crime scene, who can provide the necessary expertise so that at least we have a sense of how people died, when did they die, and the kind of violation that have been perpetrated against. So, yes, we want investigation, but I don't think this is a genuine demand for an investigation. People know that mass graves are extremely fragile, and right now there are probably crime scene left to be investigated effectively. But we don't need that investigation to conclude that Israel has been committing war crimes after war crimes after war. We have plenty of evidence, October 7, of many of those violations. We at Amnesty International have documented with good evidence indiscriminate shelling. We know from people on the ground that almost all civilians' infrastructures have been destroyed. And this cannot be justified just by the notion of military objective, of military necessity. We have the evidence required to conclude that Israel has, you know, repeatedly, to an extent unprecedented extent, violated international law. It is now time for the United States, more than time, it's too late, in fact, for the United States to take a stand, to denounce Israel's violence, to stop arming Israel, because that's what they are still doing, and to do everything in their power to put an end to this bloodshed, to the killings of the Palestinians. that we are witnessing, that we are all made to witness.
Can you talk, Dr. Kalamar, about the U.S. disconnect of the Biden administration? On the one hand, calling vaguely for a ceasefire and saying from Blinken to President Biden, their hearts are broken when it Palestinian casualties. But on the other hand, continuing to supply the weapons.
It's not a disconnect. That's well organized and very well scripted. You know, they are making some sound that they feel they have to make, but that has absolutely no impact on their actions. We are now middle of April. A month ago, finally, the United States agreed to a ceasefire, adding, though, that it was non-binding. So, you know, that also shows that their heart was not really into the ceasefire.
The last one, the U.S. abstained.
Yes, insisting that the ceasefire was actually not that the resolution was non-binding. They have had plenty of opportunities since October to use their right of veto to stop it. And let me add, and as well as the release of all hostages, you know, it's not a disconnect. I think it's a very well planned, very well scripted commitment to support Israel all the way, including to a possible genocide. Because let's recall that the International Court of Justice has concluded that the risk of genocide were extremely high. And we have every evidence in front of us of those risks. Indeed, some eminent legal scholars have concluded that genocide was already occurring. So the United States is providing support to a country that is violating international law repeatedly, that is justifying those violations in the name of going after without due respect for the proportionality and the discrimination that should accompany their actions. By so doing, the United States is making itself complicit to some of the worst possible crimes being committed right now.
And Dr. Agnes Kalamar, wider context of what your report finds, you've said that the world is facing the demise of the 1948 international order created after the Second War, yeah, amid both the conflict in Gaza and in Ukraine. If you could elaborate on your conclusions.
Sure. So I've already highlighted what's happening in Gaza and how Israel is violating international law and is justifying those violations. This is coming hot on the heels of Russia's aggression in Ukraine itself, a violation of the UN Charter. Russia, too, is justifying its violation of international law. It's justifying its violation of the UN Charter in the name of some kind of vision of its own security. Russia, too, has been justifying its repeated violations of Geneva Convention through its bombardment of Ukrainian, through the forced transfer of populations. So over the last 24 months, we have seen some of the main superpowers in this world claiming that the international legal system that was established after World War II does not apply to them. We have seen Russia doing that, we have seen Israel doing that, and we have seen the United States doing that by proxy through its support to Israel. Those institutions that were established after World War II, including the Security Council, let on the International Criminal Court, the International Court of Justice, these are the backbone of preventing the very worst happening to the world. And those institutions have been, you know, used, really. The Security Council cannot do anything for peace and security because of the abuse of the veto power. The International Court of Justice is delivering very strong rulings that everyone is ignoring. The International Criminal Court is delivering warrants, including against President Putin, that most people are ignoring. So those institutions that are supposed to protect us all are not protecting us anymore. And the national legal framework, the international normative framework, is being progressively emptied out through those actions and through the justification of those violations. And Israel is saying international law does not apply to us because we have a well-founded military objective and military necessity, pretending that this military necessity takes precedence over everything. That is not the case. That is not the case. When Russia is saying international charter does not apply to us because of whatever NATO may be doing, they are also emptying out the UN Charter. That is not the purpose of the UN Charter. That is not there to be violated by Russia in that way. So the entire legal normative framework right now is at risk of completely collapsing. And what do we have instead? Nothing. We have the power of the arms, the weapons, and we, you know, we are basically going back to our pre-1940 We are back. We were supposed not to ever again go back to.
And if you could also talk about, you know, a number of places that the report highlights that receive very little media attention, Myanmar and Sudan, if you could talk about the massive rights violations going on there.
Yes, Abby, and that, too, I should have mentioned, these are the so-called forgotten crises. They are characterized by massive violations by parties to that conflict. Sudan in particular, seen thousands of people dead over the last 12 months, the largest number of people, refugees abroad in a very short period of time. The massive use of sexual violence, ethnic violence. And finally, when the Security Council took action, it took them almost a year, Their resolution has been completely ignored. So the suffering in Sudan is falling off the international agenda, and yet it is extremely, extremely heartbreaking. In Myanmar, there the military government has been protected by China. We finally saw the Security Council a year and a half ago. Taking a resolution that was quite timid, but a first step. But meanwhile, the military is armed by China. They have continued their indiscriminate or even targeted attacks on civilians throughout the territory. Hundreds of people have been arrested, tortured. Even political prisoners have been condemned to death, sentenced to death, and killed. That's the situation in Myanmar. I'm not mentioning the Democratic Republic of Congo that has completely fallen the agenda for the last 20, 30 years, and yet it is probably the longest ever crisis again where no one is taking action or the kind of action that is being required. So the forgotten crises around the world are multiplying. They are increasing. In fact, according to the expert, we are witnessing an increase in the number of armed conflict around the world, a reflection of a very unstable international reflection of the conflict between the three superpowers vying for hegemony, the United States, Russia, and China, and the location of those conflict by proxy, I will say, between them, is costed in human lives, in hundreds and thousands, millions of human lives around the world.
Finally, Agnes Callamard, if you can talk about the alarm that you're sounding in this report on artificial intelligence and its role in furthering racism, discrimination, division during public elections. You note the dominance of big tech risks a supercharging of human rights violations. Talk about what you see as the dangers.
Absolutely. So we know that over the last 12 months, we have seen generative artificial intelligence coming into our almost daily reality. It is a technology that no one really fully understands, certainly not politicians and policymakers. It is one that is completely unregulated as of now. And if what has happened with artificial intelligence, non-generative one, is to be the benchmark by which to assess what is going to happen in the future, then we need to be very worried. Over the last few years, Amnesty International has been monitoring how artificial intelligence, through, for instance, platform, social media platform, in in facial recognitions, through the spywares, all of those technologies have had a disastrous impact on human rights. Over the last 12 months in Facebook, for instance, platforms have been used to launch and to spread ethnic violence in Ethiopia. In Serbia, we have documented that semi-automated algorithms have been used, particularly in the context of the provision of public social assistance, in ways that has discriminated against Roma people and people with disability. Spywares that were denounced, that have been denounced since 2020, 2021 with the Pegasus project. Well, guess what? In 2023, more evidence of Pegasus being used in many countries around the world, including India, where we're going to have elections coming up. So the control of the spyware is happening. In addition to Pegasus that continue to be used around the world, we have monitored this year the use of the Predator files, EU, European-based, and that too has been used and sold around the world, including against journalists, activists, human rights defenders. So abusive facial recognition, abusive mass surveillance, abusive use of spyware. All of those things are extremely dangerous for human rights, including in a context where there is a multiplication of armed conflict, and they should be the object of moratorium. We are calling as well on those big tech companies. This model is feeding the multiplication of data, of certain kind of data. We are calling on them as well to be much better regulated, but also to take action to regulate their own content. But it's a Wild West. It's a Wild West in a context of the collapse of the international system. This is why we are sounding the alarm. I mean, you know, as of today, we have the international system on the brink of collapse. We have an industrial revolution, a revolution of information technology that no one is regulating effectively, and that has the potential to run a disaster for it is. It is more than time to wake up to the reality that we are confronting. If we want to deliver to our children and grandchildren a safer planet. I haven't even mentioned the climate crisis in the midst of it all. So I'm sorry if I'm being very apocalyptic here, but I think people need to wake up to that, to the reality that we are really, really facing an incredibly serious, dangerous situation for all of us.
Agnès Callamard, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Amnesty International Secretary General speaking to us from London. When we come back, protests on campuses across the United States are rocking U.S. campuses. We'll speak with two students where major arrests have been made, University of Texas, Austin and Columbia. Stay with us. Back in 20 seconds.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sound. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're turning in the welfare lines, crying at the doors. footsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds.
Talking About a Revolution by Tracy Chapman. This is Now, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
Protests against Israel's assault on Gaza have rocked campuses from coast to coast over the past week amid intensifying police crackdown. At the University of Texas in Austin, school officials called in local and state police, including some on horseback, who violently broke up a student encampment on campus. At least 50 people were arrested, including at least one journalist. Some faculty at UT Austin are going on strike today to protest the police crackdown. Meanwhile, the Gaza Solidarity at Columbia University continues a week after over 100 students were arrested in a failed attempt by the university administration to clear the demonstration. Student Minou Shafiq had set on Tuesday a midnight deadline to reach an agreement on clearing an encampment, but the school extended negotiations for another 48 hours. On a visit to campus Wednesday, House Speaker Mike Johnson called on Shafiq to resign.
I am here today joining my colleagues and calling on President Shafiq to resign if she cannot immediately bring order to this chaos. As Speaker of the House, I am committing today that the Congress will not be silent. Jewish students are expected to run for their lives and stay home from their classes hiding in fear.
For more, we're joined in New York by Sarah King, member of Columbia University Apartheid Divests. She is Jewish, one of the students at the encampment last week, who's now suspended. We're also joined by Joshua Sklar, a graduate student, University of Texas Austin, a member of Jewish Voice for Peace Austin, who is at Wednesday's protest. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Josh, there were more than 50 arrests at UT Austin. If you can respond to the House Speaker, who's saying that these encampments around the country are anti-Semitic and...
It's absolutely ridiculous. I was there with a contingent of Jewish students, and we were received very warmly. There were even Jewish Zionists there, and they were not harassed at all. In fact, I would say that they probably felt safer than the majority of protesters.
Sarah King, if you could describe what's happening now at Columbia University and your own position, you were suspended?
Yes, I was one of the over 100 students who was arrested as part of a peaceful protest in the Gaza Solidarity encampment. I'm one of the students who's been suspended as well, so I'm currently not allowed to be on campus. And I have to say, it's the camp itself is very beautiful. It's been a real place of interfaith celebration and solidarity in support of the people of Gaza, who are now at over 200 days of genocide. But the threat is really coming from Columbia University, which has sent the police on hundreds of its students who are entrusted to its care.
And can you talk, Sarah, about what's happened, how you got suspended and your treatment? I've been talking to a number of Columbia and Barnard students who said that some of them were given 15 minutes to get out of their dorm and your meal card canceled as you're banned from campus as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm one of the lucky ones because I live off campus, but many students live in Columbia housing, and so they were evicted from their homes or locked out from their homes, probably illegally in many cases. We're looking into it, and they lost access to their normal food. I had an undergraduate who is low income and was staying with me because she was evicted with no notice and lost access to her meal plan. And it's really very concerning the way Columbia uses the threat of initially it was just quote unquote the threat of housing, the threat of loss of food to try to, you know, as a cudgel to get students into the correct political line that is best for its pocketbook, its investment portfolio. And now they're threatening to set the National Guard on us, risking another Jackson State, another Kent State, where students have been killed because the National Guard were set on students. And they're willing to risk the threat of violence at their hands because we're not, you know, consistent with what's best for their board of trustees or for their portfolios.
And Sarah, what about your response to Mike Johnson being invited to speak at Columbia University on campus yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, first, I think it's that he was allowed there. Like, I myself am not allowed on campus. I'm you know, one of many talented and promising students with bright futures who have been banned from campus. But Mike Johnson, who is an open racist and white supremacist, along with people like Gavin McGinnis, the head of the Proud Boys, they were welcomed on campus yesterday. And to me, that really tells the story of what's at stake here, which is that, you know, the students fighting for Palestinian liberation are part of an interracial coalition. So many Jewish students, Muslim students, Black, Brown, Arab students working together for the cause of freedom on one side. And then on the other side, you have political opportunists like the House Speaker who, you know, will take any excuse they can get to come after that kind of interfaith, multi-generational coalition fighting for freedom. And right now it happens to be under the guise of something like anti-Semitism. But, you know, it's there's no substance to it at all. And I think anybody who came to campus and saw the worst prosecution that the Jewish students on campus are facing is from Columbia University. We were disproportionately banned by Columbia because so many of us are part of the Gaza Solidarity encampment trying to prevent a genocide in our name.
Joshua Sklar, you wrote a piece in the Austin Chronicle, "We Need a Ceasefire Now," it was called. The subtitle, "Anti-Palestinian Violence is Not on the Other Side of the Globe. It's here in Austin, too." If you can talk about that and how protesters were treated yesterday. You had riot police on horseback?
Yeah, I think that there's been this narrative that that there's been rampant anti-Semitism, and this simply is not the case. The people who are being targeted are Muslim students, Arab students, and especially Palestinian students. Police came in on horseback, and they attacked protesters. I heard from other students that during an earlier part of the protest, they were clearly targeting brown people and women. I wasn't there personally, but this is what I heard.
Let me ask Sarah King a final question. We have 10 seconds. That is 48-hour extension goes till tonight. What are the plans? 10 seconds, Sarah.
You know, I think most of the people at the encampment have already agreed to risk being less moved by force. Columbia concedes to our demands, which refer to divestment, amnesty, and financial transparency.
We want to thank you both for being with us. Sarah King, Columbia University Apartheid Divestment, Joshua Sklar at UT Austin. I'm Amy Gnarmin Sheikh.
The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival is back June 19th to 23rd. Experience 5 days of music, comedy, film, and art in diverse venues across Calgary, Alberta. Featuring New York experimental hardcore trio Show Me the Body as guest curator, Incisive Sugar Mickens, Los Angeles indie rockers Cherry Glazer, Canadian indie rock sensation Ecstasy, genre-bending rap artist Carrie Faux, Montreal-based hip-hop trio Planet Giza, 70s Zamrock revivalist Witch, trailblazing Argentine singer-songwriter Juanita Molina, and many, many more. Plus, there's 20 more artists still to be announced. Check out the current lineup and get your passes and tickets at sledisland.com.
Hey folks, Joey KS here, and you are listening to Oh No Radio on CJSF 90.1 on that FM dial. We're broadcasting to you over the stolen and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. On today's show, we got an hour of great local music for you. We're going to be kicking things off with some brand new Parlor Panther. They just released their album Bloom a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, we're going to be kicking things off with the title track from that album. It's a fantastic listen. There's a great music video that goes along with it as well. And yeah, very excited to play that track on the show for you today. And what better time to be playing a song called Bloom when it's spring and it's lush and lovely outside. Following that, we're going to be playing some Aura Kogan with the track High Noon. That's from their latest release, Formless. Just came out a little while ago. They're going to tour with that album as well. You can catch them as